I'm in Cape Coast, Space FM Takwa and Gaskia FM in Techiman. Also live on X Spaces, Facebook and YouTube. The Midday News is supported by Petrosol Platinum Energy, energizing dreams. Coming up this afternoon, Ken Ofori-Atta's legal saga takes a new turn as Ghana High Commissioner in the US reveals that the embattled former minister was declared medically fit for detention.
Yes, the ICE people confirmed that he was all right. Initially, they had medical people to determine whether he was fit to be held in a detention center, and they were convinced and were sure that he was okay.
We've got details for you as the High Commissioner hints that detention may be beyond visa issues given the involvement of the FBI.
I suspect it's a combination of these two factors. ICE normally will pick you for immigration issues.
Okay.
But then, of course, when the FBI comes in, then there must be some criminality or Interpol police request.
Also this afternoon, Auditor General raises red flags over increasing number of passengers carrying arms through Ghana's airports as the 2024 report discloses aviation security intercepting over 2,000 ammunition and 20 guns in 2023 alone.
Increasing number of weapons and ammunition carried by passengers. This, I think, is really serious.
Also, Ghana Airport Company justifies rising charges at the airports, insisting the revenues are needed to improve infrastructure.
It may be expensive. However, there are critical infrastructure that we need to implement if we want to see Ghana as the aviation hub. Without those infrastructure being in place, we wouldn't be anywhere near.
We're live at the Public Accounts Committee for details also coming up. Public utility workers step up their opposition to private sector participation in the Electricity Company of Ghana, demanding that government halts the process. We're live at their news conference, which comes off shortly in sports.
Manchester United appoint former midfielder Michael Carrick as caretaker manager until the end of the season.
Also, baseless, unsubstantiated and disparaging remarks by a party member. Those are the words of the General Secretary of the National, the New Patriotic Party, following comments made by Professor Kwabena Frimpong-Boateng describing the party as fake and corrupt.
Twist people's arms, bribing delegates, and intimidating others to get a flag bearer. You know, this is the beginning of corruption. The present MPP is not MPP, it's fake. What I see now, it is not the MPP I used to.
These and more with me, Mamisi Nyamiche Thompson. This is Joy News, independent, fearless, and credible. Please stay. Let's get into the details now. Ken Ofori-Atta's legal saga with the state has taken a new turn as Ghana's ambassador to the U.S., Victor Smith, revealed that the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement confirmed the embattled minister was medically fit to be held in detention prior to his admission. Now, the disclosure comes amid ongoing controversy over Mr. Ofori-Atta's health, with his representatives insisting months ago that he was not medically fit to travel to Ghana following a recent surgery. Speaking on Joy News' PM Express with Evans Mensah yesterday, Ambassador Smith noted that ICE had arranged for medical personnel to assess Mr. Ofori-Atta shortly after his arrest.
Yes, the ICE people confirmed that he was all right. Initially, they had medical people to determine whether he was fit to be held in a detention center, and they were convinced and were sure that he was okay. He was on medication, but he wasn't seeing any doctor at the time. And he had his medication, so he could be put in the detention center.
So in other words, since he was arrested, the ICE itself had examined him to determine whether he was medically fit to be in detention.
Well, they had caused for him to be assessed by the medical personnel, not themselves. Because I've been to one of those detention centers before. They are very, very fully manned medical center for the detainees.
Ambassador Smith further added that the FBI has been involved in the arrest, and that signals that the case goes beyond immigration issues.
I suspect so. The ICE did the arrest, but A few hours ago, I was also informed the FBI were involved. And of course, that sort of corroborated with what the Attorney General told me, that the FBI had informed him that they had picked him up.
Okay.
So were you also, I suspect.
I suspect
it's a combination of these two factors. ICE normally will pick you for immigration issues.
Okay.
But then, of course, when the FBI comes in, then there must be some criminality or Interpol police request. So the red alert comes in there. So the combination of the two of them, you know, convinces me that Ghana government had requested for this man to be brought in to help us, if you like, unravel some issues that have been brought against him as a former minister.
Well, so how many people get to stay in the U.S. or get to be deported to their home country after ICE arrests them? Evan Spencer takes us through the chances of Ken Oforiatta, according to data found by ICE website since President Donald Trump became U.S. president.
Between January 28, 2025 to January 8, 2026, there have been a total of 352,590 arrests under Trump, right? Remember that he was sworn in January 20 in the U.S. Out of the total, they have deported 352,380. In other words, almost everybody they arrest, they deport. It just leaves you, give or take, 200 plus people who manage to make a case to stay in the U.S. after they've been arrested. And currently, they have 68,990 people in detention, which includes Ken Oforiatta. So, pause for a second. This is the figure that struck me. 99.94% of all those arrested by ICE under Trump were deported. 99.94% of all individuals, regardless of status, once arrested, you are deported. So, that tells you Ken Oforiatta's chances of actually making a case to stay in the U.S. after this arrest.
Evans Mensah there. Well, let's engage lawyer for Ken Oforiatta, Frank Davis, who joins us on the phone lines. We're grateful for your time, Mr. Davis. Now, you've long held that Mr. Oforiatta is recuperating and could not come to Ghana to help the OSP in investigations. How do you respond to the claims or the assertion by the Ghana ambassador that Mr. Oforiatta is actually medically fit for detention?
Hello. Good afternoon to your cherished listeners and esteemed viewers. Let it be told to the ambassador that at no particular point in time have we said that Ken Oforiatta was picked up by ICE from a medical facility or on a hospital bed. All this business of his medically fit, neither here nor there. It's really unnecessary at this point to be bandying these words about. He has gone for surgery, which we all know. All we are saying is that he is recuperating and that he's in consultation with his medical team. And they will have to give him the all clear to come. I'm wondering why it is becoming increasingly difficult for us to understand the simple fact of life. Whoever said that Ken Oforiatta was on ICU help before he was picked up by ICE? He was picked up in his home or wherever they picked him up. I mean, so what is new?
But
that he's medically fit. Why don't you know that he's medically fit?
Well, so the assertion previously held is that he cannot come until, you just said, his doctors give him the all clear. ICE is also saying that he's medically fit for detention. In this situation, he can equally come back home, can't he? Can he not?
Well, that is your logic. It is on mine. Your logic is totally different from mine. If ICE are saying that he's medically fit for detention, that is different from traveling to Ghana to come in answer to charges here. It's different. And as I'll reiterate, no one has said that Ken is not fit. All we are saying is that he is going through a recuperative process. And his doctors are advising him.
Mm.
It's as simple as that.
Right. Well, what does the FBI's involvement now mean? And how does it change the scope of the legal proceedings?
I am not about to speak to FBI. All I know is ICE. And those who think that the FBI can have any influence on what ICE is doing do not exactly know what they're saying. All right? The ICE proceedings is totally different from whatever FBI is investigating. I don't know what FBI is investigating. I have no information of that. My client has not told me anything about that, and I'm not able to speak to it. But I ask myself, what Ambassador Smith, with the greatest of respect, came to do yesterday night on radio? Is it not a failed mockery of international diplomacy? So all along, they have been monitoring ICE and FBI, leading to Ken's arrest. And this same person, Ambassador Smith, wanted to extend consular assistance and services to Ken, and he comes boldly on radio to say that they have been collaborating and feeding information to ICE and FBI to arrest Ken and put him in custody. Okay. If that is what is going on, Ghanaians are the better judges. But let me tell you something. let me tell you something. Sedinam Tamakru Ationu has been convicted by a court of competent jurisdiction, a criminal court of competent jurisdiction, of corruption and corruptible tendencies. She has been convicted and is now a jailbird. She's a criminal fugitive in the United States. I think our government, on the threshold of what they promised Ghanaians, should be able to bring Ationu back to Ghana, and then they can deal with Ken Ofori Atta. Now, Sedinam Ationu, she has blood running through her veins. Ken Ofori Atta has palm kernel oil, Adringo, in his veins. So he is now more important than Sedinam Ationu, who has been convicted. This is the justice we are preaching in Ghana. This double standards and hypocrisy and intellectual dishonesty will not aid Ghana. Let us all be fair to the issues. If we are preaching justice, let us preach justice. If we are preaching rule of law, let's preach. If we are preaching due process, let us preach it. Not this selectivity. Please.
Right. Mr. Frank Davis, we're grateful for your time on the Midday News. Mr. Frank Davis is a lawyer for former Finance Minister Ken Ofori Atta. Now, the Auditor General has raised red flags over an increasing rate of gun and ammunition interception at Ghana's airports. The auditor's report of 2024 into the books of the Ghana Airport Company Limited has revealed that in 2023 alone, at least 2,000 ammunitions and guns were intercepted from passengers at Ghana's airports, raising safety concerns. Listen to Vice Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Samuel Atta-Mills, detail the situation captured by the report when the Airport Company Limited appeared before the committee a while ago.
Increasing number of weapons and ammunition carried by passengers. This, I think, is really serious. On paragraph 1110 from the auditors, it says, according to the Director of Aviation Security, all cases of the above were referred to National Investigation Bureau for the necessary action. However, the passengers were allowed to board their flights due to the absence of a policy on passengers carrying weapons. Does it mean that they allow them to board the plane with their weapons?
Well, James Aveji joins me on the phone line. So, James, how is the Ghana Airport Company Limited dealing with this situation?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you about that shortly, but first, this problem or this situation, as we are learning, is both at the international screening point as well as the domestic screening point at our airport. For instance, at the international screening point, the report indicates that four weapons or guns, including 198 rounds of ammunition, were intercepted at the international screening point. At the domestic site, 6 weapons and 1,879 ammunition were intercepted so far. So this is not only an international issue, but at a domestic airport screening point as well. Both the Minister for Transport, Honorable Joseph Nikpe, and the MD of the DACL, Yvonne Nana Efuye Opari, indicated that this happened because there was no document indicating what should be done and what not should be done at the airport, and that has been put in place now. Screening has been up at the various checkpoints.
What happened was that anytime you were in the airport with a weapon, it was taken to a different apartment, not with you, till you alight, that the weapon will be given back to you. So those were the arrangements. But now, we now have a direct instructions indicating what should happen when you have a weapon with you at the airport.
So if you have a weapon with you at the airport, what happens?
So if you have a weapon currently, you have to declare it.
Okay.
Once you declare it and it's licensed, you are able to travel with it. If it is not licensed, we confiscate it and send it to National Investigation Bureau.
What if it's licensed but you haven't declared it? What if it's licensed but you haven't declared it?
If it's not declared, we still confiscate.
So you have a weapon, you have licensed it. When you get to the airport, what should you do?
You disclose it that you are carrying a license.
Whom will you disclose it to?
To the Aviation Security Department.
Well, James, so the concern also about increasing charges at the airport came up. What was the justification for that?
Mommy, that stemmed from, you remember, the ECOWAS community issued a statement on the charges and the concerns over the increasing charges in some airports, including Ghana. The MD said, she admitted that as we speak, Ghana's charges are quite high. But there is a need for that in order to improve infrastructure so that we can match up with other modern airports across the sub-region and the world.
Comparatively, we are about number 4 in the region, in Africa. In the world, we rank about 15. So it may be expensive.
In terms of cost.
It may be expensive. However, there are critical infrastructure that we need to implement if we want to see Ghana as the aviation hub. Without those infrastructure being in place, we wouldn't be anywhere near our sister airports like Cairo in Egypt, Morocco, that's way ahead of us, in South Africa. And so all these airports that I've mentioned have certain infrastructure that we yet don't have. So we need to implement some of these charges in order to bring ourselves up to their standard.
All right, James. And just before you go, who else is to appear before the committee?
As we speak, other agencies under the Transport Ministry, the Civil Aviation Social Center, I just left before I walked out of at the room, also answering questions on some infractions. We expect the Agric Minister to take the statement.
All right, James. Okay, thank you very much for the update. Let's go to the Supreme Court now. And the Apex Court has set January 28 for the ruling on a certiorari application filed by Matthew Nyindam, the NPP's parliamentary candidate in the 2024 election. Mr. Nyindam is challenging the decision of the Tamale High Court, which annulled the 2024 parliamentary election results in Kpandai and ordered a rerun. The court had earlier suspended the planned rerun, directing the EC to halt all preparations pending its determination on the matter. And Fatal Bayaga is in court and joins us with the latest. Fatal, what transpired in court today?
So all the parties involved in this particular certiorari application were in court today. So EC, the applicant, and then the first interested party, that's the NDC. And in the MPP's arguments, that's the arguments by the applicants led by Gary Nimako, he spoke, made argument that based on the documents that they have, the NDC candidate did not file his application within the 21 time frame, and for that reason, they want the court to quash the decision of the Tamale High Court. In fact, he argued that the court lacks the jurisdiction, I must say, to be able to determine this particular case, and for that reason, they are calling on the Apex Court to quash this particular decision. But the NDC's lawyer, or the lawyer for the first interested party, Sika Abla, spoke about the fact that, or makes the argument that the NDC, you know, filed the application on the 25th of January, given the fact that the EC gazetted is a result on the 6th of January 2025. And for that reason, the MPP can make the argument that the application or the application should be quashed. So the judges, led by Justice Palmer, listened to the arguments of all the parties involved and then set January 28th for the ruling on this particular matter.
Right, Bayaga, thank you very much for the update in court. And you're still listening to the Midday News here on Joy 99.7 FM. We'll take a break when we return. Public utility workers step up their opposition to private sector participation in ECG, demanding that government halts the process. We're live there at their news conference shortly, and also we'll tell you the latest in sports. Welcome back. Sports.
I mean, see, former midfielder Michael Carrick has been appointed Manchester United's caretaker manager until the end of the season. The 44-year-old replaces Darren Fletcher, who has returned to the club's under-18 team. Now, Carrick will take charge from the dugout for Saturday's Premier League derby against Manchester City at Old Trafford. Before I go, Black Stars forward Antoine Semenyo is available for Manchester City tonight as they face Newcastle United in the EFL Cup semi-final after a change to the rules.
Thank you very much for sports. Now, the Electricity Company of Ghana is investigating a major blackout that left parts of the Greater Kumasi Metropolis and surrounding areas without power yesterday. For nearly 3 hours, areas including Asukwa, Oforikrom, Tafu and the Central Business District were in darkness, disrupting businesses and nightlife. The outage occurred just 48 hours after AXA Energy's connection to the national grid via the Ghana Grid Company. Now, ECG says the cause is still unknown. Benjamin Obing Entry is the company's PRO for the Asian region.
Yesterday at around 6 o'clock in the evening, we lost supply from our partner's grid crew. And as a result of that, some customers who normally get power from the regular supply point in Kumasi experience an outage. So we liaise with grid crew and other partners within the supply chain. And at about 8:20, power supply was restored to all affected customers. And then come I ran into our pools or engines, and now when the outage happens. Okay, thank you.
Well, despite the power restoration, there are still pockets of localized outages, which the distributor says engineers are working round the clock to rectify.
The feeders that are there, or the distribution line that is down, is the intensity line, and then the Kumaka line. So the Kumaka line is even affecting one local transformer around Akurim. But then the intensity line, customers around Asenaman, so intensity, the Bokwa, Menchia, and Kofuridia, they are affected. And as we speak, our team is on its way to rectify the challenge and restore power supply to our customers.
Well, public utility workers step up their opposition to private sector participation in the Electricity Company of Ghana, demanding that government halts the process. We're live now at that press conference, and my colleague Collins Frimpong joins us on the line. Collins, what came up at that press conference?
Mami, the press conference just ended, and it was addressed by the General Secretary for Trade Union Congress, Joshua Ansa. And according to him, before July last year, workers of ECG and NETCO met government, and they made clear deliverables to them that if they are able to make some of these deliverables, they should not privatize ECG and NEDCO. And in the last 6 months, according to Joshua Ansah, ECG have been able to increase its revenue from 900 million Ghana cedis to 1.7 billion Ghana cedis, which is about 90% revenue increase. And also NEDCO, despite most of its customers being on lifeline, has also reduced its losses by about 8%, which is a clear indication that workers of ECG and NEDCO are capable of managing these state companies. And if clearly supported, they'll be able to run the company and also provide profit for the state. So they are not expecting or they are rejecting any form of privatization by the government, whether total privatization or they just want to include private sector into ECG and NEDCO. They are rejecting any forms of that. So they are also urging government, especially Finance Ministry and the Energy Ministry, to provide clear deliverables to management of ECG and NEDCO.
Right, Collins, thank you for that. Now, this afternoon, the New Patriotic Party says it has taken serious exception to comments made by former Minister of Environment, Science and Technology and Innovation, Professor Kwabena Frimpong-Boateng, in a television interview where he criticized the party's current state, described it as, quote, fake, and openly distanced himself from the NPP. In a statement dated January 13th, the NPP says it has initiated processes to expel the former Minister over what he describes as conduct unbecoming of a party member. We'll hear from the party shortly. First, listen to the former minister speak on Channel 1 TV.
The present MPP is not MPP, it's fake. What I see now, it is not the MPP I used to.
But the question still stands. Do you still consider yourself a member of the MPP?
Not the fake one.
So which one is the real one?
The real one is there. It's a virtual thing, and the members are there in the background. Look at how they elected their last flag bearer, you know, twist the arms of weak and...
This is for the 2024 election?
Yes. Twist people's arms, bribing delegates, and intimidating others to get a flag bearer. You know, this is the beginning of corruption.
Well, my colleague Stephen Mensah joins me in the studio with details of the party's response. Stephen.
Well, the party says it has taken note of comments made by former minister Professor Kwabena Frimpong-Boateng in an interview on Channel 1 TV on January 12. He described the party as fake and claimed he no longer considers himself a party member. The party also rejected his allegation that the 2023 presidential primary was rigged in favor of Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia, describing the claim as baseless. The NPP says Professor Frimpong-Boateng's remarks are reprehensible and contrary to party values and has therefore begun processes to expel him in line with his constitution.
All right, we see how this unfolds. Moving on, residents in Media along the Pokwa-Saint-Sawom Highway construction zone are being forced to evacuate after years of flooding caused by blockage of the drainage system there. The flooding is as a result of obstructed natural waterways from ongoing construction, leaving homes and streets submerged. Residents say repeated appeals to authorities have gone unanswered. Let me take you live there now and speak to Adobia Sari, who is on the ground at Media. Adobia, paint a picture of what you've seen so far.
Exactly, Mommy. When you come to Media, where I am, there's a large portion of the community is almost submerged in water because of a lack of a proper drainage system. So some 8 years ago, they did have a waterway, but due to the construction of the Ofanko and Sawam Highway, their waterway has been blocked. They were promised that a proper gutter or a proper waterway was going to be constructed for them, but they haven't seen that in the past 8 years. And because of that, all the water and the liquid waste they make still stay with them. Now, this is causing breed of mosquitoes and a lot of infections they have to battle with. Some months ago, a 3-month-old baby died here because of the flooding. So they're just pleading with authorities to come to their aid, and this is what they have.